This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
As the great basketball philosopher Rasheed Wallace once said, ball don't lie. And perhaps for the rest of time, everyone that shoots anything into a trash can will forever say, Kobe! Welcome back to another edition of the Drop and Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. This is episode 46. And it's not often or maybe ever that I've ever really started a podcast not truly knowing what to say, because that's kind of a prerequisite for hosting a podcast or putting a podcast together, is you got to have some things to talk about. But, you know, the basketball world was just shook by the tragic news of Kobe Bryant's passing and that tragic helicopter crash that claimed the life of 8 other people as well, including his 13-year-old daughter, Gigi, in outside of the Los Angeles area in California. And it's going to be one of those moments that for the rest of my life, I'll remember exactly where I was when it happened. I was in I was at St. David's Hospital here in the Austin area. My wife and I were participating in a child CPR class. Basically, they teach you how to do CPR on adults, infants, and babies. And with our first child on the way in April, it was something that we wanted to do. It was something that we felt was very necessary just to get back up to speed with being able to do CPR. And we're probably about halfway through the class, and I look down at my Apple Watch. I get a little buzz on there, and I see the ESPN update basically saying that, you know, per TMZ, Kobe Bryant passed away at age 41 in a helicopter crash. And I'm just, in a million years, I never expected to see that name associated with that type of news. I mean, Kobe Bryant was one of those guys that just seemed like he was going to live forever. You know, just always had energy and was just always visible and always around. And just, he truly, you know, people talk about living life to the fullest every day, or at least trying to. I don't know of anybody that better represented that than Kobe Bryant. He literally did seem like a guy that every day he was going out to win the day in whatever he was doing. And for a long, long, long time, that was basketball. And for me, being 34 years old, I grew up with the Kobe era. I feel like that as he was hitting his prime with the Lakers and those Shaq Kobe teams, that, you know, when the Dreamcast came out and they had the NBA 2K games on Dreamcast, when my friends and I played, you couldn't be the Lakers because Kobe and Shaq were just so dominant on the game. But I feel like I grew up with that prime. And, you know, and LeBron is basically kind of my age. So I never quite looked at him the same as I did Kobe, who was older than I was. It was kind of more of an appreciation for that guy is so above most of his peers. And then he's a guy older than me, and I was playing high school basketball when Kobe was in his prime and all those things. But it's one of the, it might be the first athlete I can think of that, you know, was such a big part of my sports life growing up, and the first one that's passed away, it's certainly at least this early on. And it's difficult to put into words because really it doesn't feel real. it still doesn't, just because you know he's a guy that was sending Shaquille O'Neal's son Instagram messages about, you know, checking in on him to see if everything was good with his career and what was going on and things like that, and exchanging, you know, messages with LeBron when LeBron literally just passed him on the all-time scoring list the night before. And I mean, I don't know when it'll set in that he's not here and that he's not going to be, you know, at Lakers games or doing, you know, interviews on ESPN or, you know, doing the ESPN Plus shows and just breaking down the game or just, you know, I go to AU basketball events sometimes. And there's sometimes where the same city basically host a bunch of big events for both girls and guys. There'd be an opportunity that Kobe Bryant would be there with his daughter. So I don't know when it's going to set in, but it's something that I'll never forget exactly where I was when that news happened. And I know he's got a bit of a complicated past, given, you know, some of the stories that followed him off the court and the thing that happened in Colorado. And that story basically occurred probably before I could really immerse myself in, like, just following the coverage and the reporting and the story, the way it needed to be covered or the way it needed to be followed to truly understand what was going on. So, yeah, he's, you know, Kobe's got, you know, he had his issues in his past, and it kind of complicates, you know, how he was perceived and things like that. But you just look at the outpouring of how many people were just affected by this. And it wasn't just basketball. It wasn't just the city of Los Angeles. I mean, Neymar scored a second goal for PSG and did a Kobe tribute. And this was not long after the news had been announced. You know, Sergio Ramos went to a Real Madrid practice wearing a Kobe jersey. I mean, Mike Trout was tweeting things out. I mean, you know, Cody Bellinger with the Dodgers. It was baseball players. You know, football players in the Pro Bowl did a basketball celebration for Kobe. And it was just the entire world sports landscape was just genuinely affected significantly by this news. I mean, I think more so than any sport, the NBA is a global sport. And Kobe Bryant's one of the reasons for that. You know, with what he did in the Olympics and helping spread the basketball brand across the globe and his association with Nike and all these things. I mean, there are people all over the world with Kobe Bryant jerseys that were mourning his loss. And I think that that's a tribute to just when you watched Kobe Bryant or you listened to Kobe Bryant or you read about Kobe Bryant, you understood that from a mental standpoint, he was different than many that have come before him and many that will come after him. There won't be many people from a mental competitiveness sporting standpoint that'll be like Kobe Bryant, who since the beginning of his career to the end of his career was about one thing and one thing only, winning. Or maybe two things, winning and competing. And he truly looked at it as, I've got to outwork every single person that is in the NBA. You know, there's that story of, you know, Jay Williams tells about how Jay Williams was, I guess, getting some early work in one day in the gym. And Kobe had already been in there. And Kobe stayed in there until Jay Williams left. And he was like, you know, why you stay in there so long? And Kobe was basically like, I had to send the message that I wasn't going to let you outwork me that day. And to be wired like that is one thing. To be wired like that 24/7 constantly throughout your entire career, we're not gonna be able to follow many people like that in sports again. And that genuine competitiveness and that commitment to bettering himself and to winning was so visible. It just was, there was nothing fake about it. And it really resonated with everybody. It resonated with fellow athletes in any sport. It resonated with fans. I mean, you got to think that, you know, the LA fan base, the Laker fan base is so passionate. And, you know, they all the debates about Kobe and Jordan, but it really turned into a lot of Kobe and LeBron, kind of as LeBron was entering the peak of his career and Kobe was kind of going that downward turn from his peak. You know, and LeBron joins the Lakers. I remember the pushback of, you know, LeBron joining the Lakers. And so Lakers fans were basically not, well, they were excited, but, you know, it was a Kobe city. I mean, Los Angeles was a Kobe city. I mean, he basically built, for the most part, the Staples Center. And I know Shaquille O'Neal had a big part in that as well. But, you know, when that marriage broke apart, I mean, it was Kobe that got the Lakers back on top. Even without Shaq. So I'm totally rambling on here because I'm still almost at a loss for trying to put into perspective like what kind of loss this was for basketball and the sporting world and also his family. I mean, I haven't really touched on that, but I think that one of the reasons why, or perhaps the main reason why this affected so many people was there was nothing that Kobe Bryant enjoyed more than being a dad. And that, like his competitiveness and like his commitment to winning and all those things, there was no faking about it. I mean, he just was constantly beaming with energy whenever he was with his girls. And, you know, there's been most recent photos and short little video clips of him with his daughter at basketball games, just kind of pointing out the game to her and talking about it. He was so prideful about, you know, how good she was at basketball, and just without hesitation would say that she was going to be better than him, which makes this tragic event, I mean, infinitely more tragic because of her loss as well. You know, a young person that had so much future ahead of her, and Kobe had so much future ahead of him as well. You know, as a guy that was just entering his 40s, just entering his, you know, his post-basketball life as a father, as a, you know, a guy involved in film, as a guy involved in investments and writing and all these sorts of things, it just seemed like he was going to be one of those guys that was just constantly going to be visible, but at the same time was really starting to strike what we all try to strike no matter what profession we're in. And, you know, if we are fortunate enough to have kids, which I've got one on the way in April, and, you know, striking that work and family relationship and, you know, being able to fully dedicate yourself to your family while also trying to be successful in your craft or trying to, you know, further pursue other endeavors and things like that, as Bryant was doing. And I think that that's one of the main reasons why this hit people so hard, is because you could tell that once basketball ended, and even while basketball was ongoing during his final years, you could tell that there was nothing Kobe Bryant enjoyed more than being a father. And for him to be gone and for his family to be dealing with that kind of loss, and, you know, the loss of his of Vanessa's daughter and Gigi as well, I mean, it's tough. I mean, it's really tough. So I just, it's going to be one of those moments for the rest of my life. I'll just never forget where I was when that news broke. And I don't know, like, when it'll set in that he's not around. I mean, it feels like yesterday the guy was torching the Jazz in his final game of his career and scoring 60 points and going out in true Kobe Bryant fashion. I mean, I remember watching that game. I just remember the Twitter reaction as it was ongoing, like, oh my gosh, this is happening, because of course it is. It was Kobe Bryant. I mean, he was going to go out on a high note. He was going to go out and beat somebody. He was going to go out a winner in his final game at the NBA. He was just... Oops, I keep hitting my desk on accident. I've actually moved podcasting and desk locations. Been hitting some writing blocks in the other area, so I've moved locations in the house. Kind of gives you a glimpse into what life is like as a work-from-home writer sometimes. You got to switch things up to keep that brain going. But, you know, just from a competitiveness standpoint, I mean, he's forever going to be the gold standard of what coaches look for mentally in every sport. Try to find a guy with the mental makeup like that, that constantly wants to compete, that wants to hold himself accountable, hold his teammates accountable, hold his coaches accountable, because he's just focused on one thing, winning. You know, it's winning. I saw a quote, I don't remember the exact one, but at one point, you know, when he got into it one time with a teammate at the Lakers, he was basically like, I don't understand why anything else would, why like, what we do would be about anything else besides winning. This is about winning, you know, and that's how he approached life. That's how he approached basketball. That's how he approached, you know, life after basketball, you know, helping his daughters improve and being a father. And you know, and that Instagram post of how, you know, his team went from worst to first, you know, the girls' AAU basketball team. And I don't know if we'll see another competitor quite like Kobe Bryant, and just, I don't know if we'll see something like this in sports, this kind of loss, where so many people globally are affected. You know, it's one thing that, and I saw Jeff Ketchum mention this on Orange Bloods, if anybody was alive, like during the Roberto Clemente thing, and that's the only thing I can kind of compare it to. You know, I think Dale Earnhardt Jr., you know, when that occurred, that tragedy occurred in NASCAR, but I mean, he was still racing NASCAR. You know what I mean? Like, and the wreck happened, and it's kind of like, I mean, I don't know where exactly I'm going with that, but the Kobe thing just felt different. You know, this was, I mean, it was a helicopter crash, and a guy that retired from the game, and he had, you know, just, it was just so, like, what? What happened? You know, similar to when Clemente was flying over to deliver supplies after his 3,000th hit, and it's just like, how is this guy gone? And that, I think that's just a general thought for a lot of people to have is like, how is this guy gone? And just to see the reaction from players in any sport in the city of Los Angeles and all the reactions around the world, it's clear that basketball is in the sports world is feeling a little bit more empty right now. But I think that Kobe would appreciate that one of the prevailing thoughts that's emerged from just his tragic loss and, you know, being gone way too soon is the focus on being a father. I just have seen so many people talking about, you know, just hugging their kids and spending time with their kids and telling stories about being a girl dad and things like that. I think that he's probably smiling down and seeing the reaction of just how many people are not only appreciative of the father that he was and he was trying to be, but also that they're trying to follow in those footsteps as well, which, I mean, if that can make the world a better place, which I think everybody spending more time with their kids can, there can be at least a little bit of good that comes out of this tragic event. So I've rambled on for almost 16 minutes about Kobe Bryant when I started a podcast saying I didn't know exactly what I was going to say about him, and apologies for being a little all over the place with that, but just one of those things you just talk and talk and talk, and it's almost therapeutic in a sense that you try to make, put into words, like what happened in that type of loss and things like that. I mean, my wife even had her friends texting her about it, you know, and she's like, I can recall her plenty of times in the house, just like walking around the house and like when she's thrown some paper into the recycling of the trash can, yelling out Kobe as she was letting it go. I mean, that's, you know, there's just not many people that come across in sports or in life that have that sort of just wide-ranging impact on people. So we'll switch gears here and talk about the Texas Longhorns because, of course, that's what I write about at orangebloods.com. That's often what we talk about on the Droppin' Dimes podcast. And they're all big weeks from here on out for Texas and Chalkus Smart. I feel kind of silly calling this a big week. Because it is, because these are two, I think these are two winnable games when you look at Texas playing at TCU on Wednesday and then back at home Saturday against Iowa State. And if Texas is going to keep its season from spiraling even more out of control, it's going to have to do it at least temporarily without Kamaka Hepa and Gerald Liddell. And it's going to have to earn at least a split this week. It absolutely cannot afford to lose both of these games because the road ahead after that is really, really tough before it gets somewhat easy again, I guess, for Big 12 standards after some games against both Kansas and Texas Tech. And I mentioned Gerald Liddell and Kamaka Hepa. Chaka Smart said that Gerald Liddell actually has a stress reaction in his back. So he said that they basically caught that early. But the only thing right now is he's got to rest for a while before they can even really reevaluate him. And that sounds like something that could keep him out of action for a fairly significant amount of time. Kamaka Hepa has a mild high ankle sprain. Based on what Smart said, that Hepa could be reevaluated in 2 weeks. Who knows how quickly he can come back from that? This is a guy that was recently inserted into the starting lineup and had added something for Texas on offense. Made some really big shots in that Oklahoma State game, played well in that road win, and was starting to find his groove a little bit in his place for the Texas basketball program. So that's obviously a little bit of a setback. And because both those guys play the four spot. Now, you could go big with a Liddell lineup playing the three, and you could go small with Hepa at a five, but both those guys primarily played the four spot. So it's, unless you want to go super, super small, which Texas already has rebounding issues as it is, I mean, it's basically going to be Kai Jones at that four spot. And then if you're Texas, you're just trying to piece it together where you want to play some, you know, Royce Ham in there or some Sims and Ham or some Baker and Sims or whatever you want to try to do to tag team that. Suddenly that position is much, much more thin than what it was prior to the injury. So they're going to have to play at least these next two games and probably more without both Liddell and Hepa. But there's one thing I wanted to talk about with Texas basketball. I mean, you guys probably aren't listening for a breakdown of what TCU is. And if you are, I mean, I'm going to write about that in my Wednesday column at orangebloods.com and then a little bit more in our game thread that we post every game at orangebloods.com. But it's been something that's kind of been bugging me. And I guess it's just a, I don't know if you want to call it a philosophical difference or something like that, but I know that everybody wants to be a player-driven program, and I totally get why. I'm a big proponent of that, whether it's football, baseball, basketball, whatever. I mean, player leadership is extremely, extremely valuable, and once you can basically hand over your program to your players and just kind of steer them while they really take ownership of that thing and have established the standard and can hold themselves accountable to the standard and do all those things, I mean, that's when your program can really take off. It's something that Nick Saban has talked about. It's something that a lot of successful coaches in any sport have talked about and have talked about wanting to build. And it's no different at Texas. Texas has been trying to build that as well. And I get it. I get it because when it works, the program is just better off that way. But when it doesn't work, I think you're seeing the downside of that with this Texas team right now. And it stood out to me some, but it didn't really stand out to me as much as it did when I was watching Texas against LSU this Saturday. And we're discussing specifically the full court pressure, the press defense or whatever you want to call it. It's not Havoc, because Havoc to Shaka Smart is the mindset aspect. You know, the total mindset that you take the floor with. It's not just a press. More or less. So we're talking specifically at the full court pressure. And it's basically Texas has said, and I don't know why I didn't really register this early on, but it was just hearing both players and Shaka Smart say this after the LSU game, it kind of just caught me off guard. Basically, it's up to the Texas players whether they're going to press or not. You know, it's something that Matt Coleman said, and Shaka Smart confirmed, and the thinking behind that from a coaching perspective is it's only going to be successful if guys want to do it. I don't want to force them to do it, because I think if I force them to do it, it won't be successful and it'll lead to too many easy opportunities the other way. Okay. I think therein lies one of the big problems right now with the Texas basketball program, and perhaps one of the big problems over the last four plus years, is I think there's been too much freedom given to the players, whether it's offensively, whether it's full court pressure, whether it's whatever. And again, if you've got the right player leadership, it works. It absolutely works. You know, when you've got, you know, your guys like your TJ Fords and your Royal Ivies and your Jonathan Holmeses, these like veteran guys or star players that just set the, you know, PJ Tucker, James Thomas. I mean, the guys that just set the tone for everybody, and just it's like, this is how we do things. This is, you know, we're going to play this way. I mean, it works. But when you don't have those kind of guys, or at least not enough of them, or at least guys that really aren't established, I think that's when, if you're a coaching staff, you've really got to grab that thing and just push it in the direction you've got to get it going in. And just how many times have we heard Texas talk about aggressiveness? Aggressiveness. I mean, players, Andrew Jones and Matt Coleman met with the media after the LSU game. They mentioned the word aggressive nine times. It's always been a huge focal point of the Texas basketball program under Shaka Smart, is, you know, the tougher, the more confident, the more aggressive team usually wins. I mean, it's said so often. And when Texas made a comeback, it erased a 16-point deficit and actually took a lead late in the second half against LSU. It was because it was the more aggressive team. And one of the reasons why it was the more aggressive team is it started using full court pressure and frustrating LSU and creating some turnover opportunities and creating bad offensive possessions by LSU. And it ignited Texas' offense because they got lost in what was happening on defense. They immersed themselves in just getting after it on defense and trying to force stops and turnovers, that when the ball was in their hands on offense, they just played freely. Everything came in rhythm. They played with more confidence because they weren't worried about scoring. They were consumed with, all right, we just got to stop. Let's go get a bucket and get another stop. And that's who Texas wants to be. And we've seen that can work for Texas. The Kansas State second half. Long stretches of that game against on the road at Oklahoma State. The first half against Kansas. The second half against LSU. I mean, we've seen examples of this, but the problem is we've just seen so many uneven performances, whether it's from half to half, game to game, player to player, from game to game, whatever it is. I mean, the most consistent thing about Texas basketball right now is it's been uneven. You can see the great, you can see the bad. You don't often see good for 40 minutes. We've seen bad for 40 minutes at West Virginia, but you don't often see good for 40 minutes. You don't have to see bad for 40 minutes. You just see some mix of whatever it is, and then the outcome is usually that Texas comes up a few points short, especially against quality opponents, or you know, against those teams known for physicalness and aggressiveness, they come up way short in the form of double-digit losses. So I guess it's just one of my biggest questions I have for Texas, and this is something that Shocker Smart's been asked about, is isn't it time to just try to force the issue with these guys? Isn't it time to just, if you believe full court pressure defense, for example, is a great way to spark aggressiveness, and you believe that aggressiveness is such a big proponent of your program, and you believe it affects success so much, don't you have to force that instead of leaving it up to your players to decide whether they're going to do it or not? And there were times in the LSU game where Texas players pressed when Shaka Smart was waving them back, or Luke Yaklich was waving them back. And there was a time late in the second half, under a minute left, where Texas Smart was on the floor signaling triangle, which is one of their full court press defenses, and the Texas players didn't do it. They went back on defense. The clock went down, and eventually LSU called a timeout with 17 seconds left after it had killed some time on the clock. And I have a hard time understanding why that sort of thing is left up to the players, when the players and the coaches so often say that it's such a big part of success. Well, then try forcing it. You know, the reality about Texas right now is its leaders, or the guys that are considered their leaders, they're just on a roller coaster right now. Sometimes they're great. Sometimes they're non-existent. Sometimes they're just okay. They don't really have a steadying force right now. In fact, they're most steady presence is its quietest guy, Jericho Sims. Jericho Sims is the quietest athlete I've ever covered in my life. It's just not in his DNA to be a vocal, I'm going to set the tone kind of guy. He plays super hard. He's been consistent. He's been a good player in Big 12 play. He's turned it on for a while now, but he hardly ever talks. He's not going to be the driving force of that sort of thing. So it's got to come from some of the other guys, whether it's Matt Coleman, Courtney Ramey, Jace Febbers, Andrew Jones, whatever. These guys are all experiencing their own ups and downs right now. When you're experiencing ups and downs like that, it's difficult to drive the leadership of a program. That's when your coaching staff has got to come in and just try to, however possible, spark all those things that they think are so important to the success of the program. And that's kind of been my big problem with Texas lately, is I just don't understand why so much of that responsibility is given to the players when the result so often has been uneven results. I mean, Texas has played 19 games. They're 12-7. They're 2-4 in the Big 12. They're not projected to make the NCAA tournament. These are desperate times. I mean, I wrote this at orangewoods.com a while ago after the West Virginia game. Shocker Smart's coaching for his job. This is his fifth year. He doesn't have an NCAA tournament win. He's missed the NCAA tournament twice. He's trending towards missing it again. I would think when you look at this Texas team's personality and its construction and its just inconsistency, that you'd want to remove some of that player freedom and maybe all of it, and just force these guys to do certain things. If you think pressing is the way to go, if you put a guy in there and he doesn't want to do it or doesn't do as well, pull him out. Pull him out. You got other bodies. You got other guys that'll go in there and play hard. Freshman Donovan Williams was a great example of that Saturday against LSU. Yeah, every time he steps on the floor, he tries to shoot the basketball. And he's going to make some plays for the other team, some turnovers, some bad shots, whatever it is. But he never lacks aggressiveness, he never lacks confidence, and he helped change the complexion of that game by just playing hard, because he's a great athlete, he has length, You know, he jumped up near midcourt, tipped a pass, an LSU pass to himself, went back down the floor and threw down one of the most awesome dunks I've seen in college basketball this season. And it helped totally change the game for Texas. And that wasn't, you know, that wasn't him excelling in some scheme or you know, just executing an offense perfectly or whatever. He's just playing hard. He's a big, long athlete that just was playing hard and playing aggressive. What Texas wants its guys to do. And then you can put a guy like that in the press and he can start to make some things happen. Like, if you've got a guard on the floor that doesn't want to do the full court pressure, or you got a couple guys that are just like, I'm not feeling it right now. Okay, well, if you want to do it as a coach and you think it's helping the game or can spark aggressiveness or whatever, you got other guys on the bench. I mean, what's it going to hurt at this point? I mean, the most consistent guy has been Jericho Sims, and you know he'll do whatever you ask him. Absolutely, he'll guard the rim or guard the ball. I mean, Kai Jones defending the ball in that full court pressure is kind of terrifying. It's something that Will Wade mentioned after the LSU game. It's hard to throw the ball in when that guy's down there. And then if you get a trapping situation where he's trapping on the ball, it's a tough situation for an opposing team to be in. I mean, TCU is a prime example of a team that you should press. They turn the ball over a lot, guards aren't their strength, and they like to play really slow tempo. What would you want to do to make them uncomfortable? Speed them up. Make their guards make tough plays, or speed up their guards and encourage bad decisions and turnovers and easy offense the other way against an unset defense for your offense. We know that Texas right now against a set defense has not been that good on offense. Because it's harder to attack a set defense than it is an unset defense. Why not try to create more opportunities? Yeah, there are going to be stretches where it just blows up. I don't understand, you know, just why. Like, I understand the theoretical idea of the player-driven aspect of all of this. If they're fully committed to it, they're going to do it to the best of their ability. If they're not, they're not. But at some point, you've got to force the issue. You just have to. And if you've got a couple guys that just aren't with it, put them on the bench. Let them understand that the way they're going to get on the floor is to fully immerse themselves in that, which is what Texas did in the second half, and it's just, which is why it almost came back from 16 points down and won the game. I just don't understand why. You know, we're at this point with Texas basketball, and this sort of thing is just ongoing. I mean, desperate times call for desperate measures. I think it's beyond past the time to just really start forcing the issue, because we've seen when Texas is that aggressive team that always talks about wanting to be, that's when it's at its best. And it's time to start trying to force that as much as possible. And with that, we'll wrap up episode 46 of the Drop and Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. Thank you for listening. Big week on the hardwood for the Longhorns again. They are at TCU on Wednesday, and then they host Iowa State on Saturday, I believe 1 p.m. at the Irwin Center. Two winnable games for Texas. And man, how different could their season suddenly look if they win those two games? And man, what the conversation would be if they lose both of those two games, fall to 2-6 in the league and 12-9 overall. We'll not be pretty on Twitter and on orangebloods.com. So in the meantime, get to theyak.com. Check out all of our great podcast content. I'm going to have some new Extra Bases podcasts coming up, both fantasy baseball and Texas Longhorns baseball. Probably going to knock out at least one of those this week as the college season and the MLB season gear up and are right around the corner. We've got a lot of great podcast content all the time at theyak.com. You can follow me on Twitter at DMcComasOB. You can always email me, Dustin@orangebloods.com. You can follow The Yak on Twitter. You can follow The Yak on Facebook. If you're not an orangebloods.com member, what are you doing? Get on orangebloods.com. I think I've plugged everything that I am a part of at this point. So with that said, have a great week. It is, what day is it? Tuesday. I'm recording this late Tuesday afternoon, so we're almost to hump day in the middle of the week. So have a great rest of the week. I hope that you all have some fun weekend plans for the Super Bowl. And until I talk to you all next time, take care.